Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2015. My name is Irene, and I will be your operator today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. We will conduct a question-and-answer session towards the end of this conference. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please press star followed by zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would like to turn now the conference over to your host for today, Mr. Jamie Sims, CFO of Vicor Corporation. You may proceed.
Thank you, Irene. Good afternoon and welcome to Vicor Corporation's conference call for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2015. As stated, I'm Jamie Sims, Chief Financial Officer, and with me here in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, Chief Executive Officer, and Dick Nagel, Chief Accounting Officer. Today we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the first quarter. The press release is available on the Investor Relations page of our website, www.vicorpower.com. We also filed an 8K with the SEC in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Form 10-K filed with the SEC on March 6, 2015. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay will be available beginning at midnight tonight through May 13, 2015. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010. And the passcode is 93464591. In addition, a replay of the conference call will be shortly available on the Investor Relations page of our website. As is our practice, I'll start this afternoon's discussion with a review of our financial performance for the quarter, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor recorded a net profit for the first quarter of $3.4 million, representing 9 cents a share on revenue of just over $64 million. For the fourth quarter, we broke even, representing a loss per share of nil, i.e. 0 cents, on revenue of $60.7 million. Notably, operating income increased by $3.8 million on a sequential quarterly revenue increase of $3.3 million. General and administrative expenses declined. Marketing and sales expenses also declined since trade show, promotional, and advertising activities were high during the fourth quarter. Research and development increased only slightly with an uptick in consumption of prototype materials. Unlike prior quarters, we did not record any unusual or otherwise non-recurring transactions, which further highlighted the leverage in our operating model. With the exception of legal fees, our cost structure is relatively predictable. While we continue to refine our organization and are always looking for ways to reduce operational costs, we are not forecasting material changes to our cost structure for the remainder of this year. We continue to pay severance and related shutdown costs associated with the fourth quarter closure of our Westcor operation in Sunnyvale, California, but those accruals occurred last year, and the payments going forward have no income statement impact. Turning to the performance of our business units, the brick business unit as a whole recorded a 4% sequential decline in revenue, as both our custom business and our Japanese subsidiary experienced weakness. Overall, sequential comparisons for the BBU are difficult as we transition the way we record manufacturing and sale of Westcor's AC to DC systems for the first quarter. Westcor had been segregated until December 2014, but its activities are now included in our Andover operations, and we are not providing pro forma comparisons. I will say that shipments for the first quarter of AC to DC systems declined, given the surge in last-time buy and buffer stock orders that were shipped in the fourth quarter. BBU bookings declined 4.6% for the first quarter. We saw softness across North America, Western Europe, and the Pacific Rim, but are not yet seeing any trends or meaningful shifts in our competitive position. As discussed during prior earnings calls, we are anticipating our new highly differentiated Vicor Integrated Adapter, or VIA, products to make a strong contribution to BBU's growth opportunities in computing, networking, wireless telecom, industrial, and defense markets. However, substantial volumes of VIA products will not start to ship until 2016. BBU bookings were strong in China after a two-quarter lull. We also saw encouraging strength in smaller but high-growth markets such as Israel. This encouraging strength was just enough to offset the declines elsewhere, leading to a book-to-bill ratio for the BBU, our largest business unit, of just over 1-to-1. VI chip revenue for the first quarter increased 36%, to some extent because of shipments that had been scheduled for Q2 delivery being rescheduled for Q1. Listeners will recall I spoke to this possibility during our last conference call on February 23rd. We suspected that customers pulling backlog from Q2 into Q1 would contribute to higher Q1 revenue, but at the potential cost of lower Q2 revenue. As I will discuss in a moment, this has proven to be the case. VI chip bookings, like revenue, have been characterized by application concentration in the data center space, and this was again the case for the first quarter. For Q1, VI chip bookings declined 16%. We believe, in anticipation of the introduction of the next generation of Intel processors, VR13, which is expected to ramp in 2016, manufacturer of servers that would have otherwise been deployed in 2015 may be delayed to realize the benefits of VR13 as compared to the current generation, VR12.5. To the extent our footprint with factorized power solutions across applications and customers will increase going from VR12.5 to VR13, this product transition is a mixed bag in that it may cause near-term softening in demand, but should result in substantially greater total revenue as VR13 applications begin to ramp. On a related front, as Patricio will address, we have started to see significant design wins for our new chip modules, both as point-of-load board-mounted devices and in chassis mount VIA packages, which validates our expectations of market reception for these products. As design cycles are typically at least 9 months in our targeted markets, we are forecasting production volumes and a beneficial diversification of customers starting as soon as Q1 2016. Picor revenue increased 35% for the first quarter, reflecting a dynamic similar to VI chips. Picor's recent revenue and bookings have been driven by the VR12.5 data center applications. While one might expect our VI chip BTM3 and our Picor PRM3 SIP solution would be ordered on a one-to-one basis, this is not necessarily the case. Picor purchase orders sometimes lagging VI chip orders for certain applications by as much as a few months. So, while VI chip bookings declined, Picor bookings increased 39% for the first quarter. Recognized distribution revenue for Q1 declined 12.5%, reflecting a slow march. Our efforts to increase design wins through distribution channels continue, but this is being accomplished with reduced reliance on distributor stock, which is not a good fit for our mass customization model. Concluding on consolidated revenue, international revenue, based on the location of the party to which we ship, rose 64.7% for the quarter, reflecting the use of Asian contract manufacturers by some of our OEM customers. Vicor's consolidated gross margin percentage for Q1 rose to 45.1% from the prior quarter's 43%, reflecting the strong performance of VI chip and Picor. The BBU's gross margin was steady, declining slightly from 45.2% to 44.6% due to mix, but weighted particularly by VJCL's performance. VI Chip's gross margins achieved a record level, reflecting two important factors. First, increased production runs, and second, the cost advantages of the chip manufacturing platform. We are very pleased with the progress made by the VI Chip manufacturing team and expect additional margin improvements as we plan for greater capacity utilization in 2016. As we have highlighted before, PiCor has a fabless production model with relatively high gross margins. For the first quarter, PiCor's gross margin increased to record levels. Notably, in Q1, VI Chip and PiCor gross margins in aggregate and after intercompany eliminations were accretive to our consolidated gross margin. Said another way, combined VI Chip and PiCor gross margins from third-party sales exceeded the third-party gross margin of the BBU. This meaningful achievement reflects two things. First, we have advanced far along the learning curve with manufacturing our innovative products. Second, these cutting-edge new products developed by PiCor and VI Chip are targeted at applications for which their value proposition is compelling and commoditization pressures are avoided. Turning to taxes, our recent calculations of quarterly income taxes have been more straightforward. For Q1, this was the case with our effective tax rate, despite initial profitability, coming in at just 3.9%. Turning to cash flow for the quarter, operations generated $5.1 million, even with net working capital experiencing an unfavorable $1.3 million swing, representing a use of cash. With the increase in revenue, accounts receivable rose, as did accounts payable, although inventories actually declined. Capital expenditures for the quarter declined to $1.5 million from $2.3 million for the prior quarter, largely reflecting the completion or near completion of the build-out of Andover manufacturing space to accommodate Westcor production, a substantial repositioning of certain production lines, and a build-out in new capacity for chip and VIA production. We are not forecasting a meaningful change in the average level of recent capital expenditures for the coming several quarters. Manufacturing is now fully consolidated, and our operational teams have proven to be quite skilled at capacity management, most notably in support of new products. Turning to our consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape with day sales at 42 days, despite the 14% sequential dollar increase. Consolidated inventories quarter-to-quarter declined, with annualized turnover climbing to 5.2 times, representing yet another new high. There were no meaningful changes to either AR or inventory reserves. Cash and short-term investments stood at $59.3 million at quarter end, up from $55.5 at the end of Q4. This figure excludes one last auction rate security with a par value of $3 million carried on our balance sheet at an estimated fair value of $2.6 million, representing roughly 85% of par. Employee headcount as of March 31st was 1,033, up 19 from 1,014 at year-end. Approximately half of this increase was associated with temporary hires in manufacturing. We also added some positions in Andover to replace a subset of the positions eliminated in Sunnyvale with the closure of Westcor and the transfer of production here. Turning to our expectations for the second quarter of 2015, we are forecasting a sequential decline in revenue. While we do not expect a material change in our operating expenses, the expected decline in revenue likely will cause profitability to significantly decline. However, as evidenced by the progress in gross margins for Q1 brought about by a higher mix of chips and SIPs, we expect the higher levels of capacity utilization to be achieved in 2016 to generate higher profitability with chips, SIPs, and VIA products. Also, as discussed in our February earnings call, our operating expense structure is established and capable of supporting much higher sales. So the primary variable impacting quarterly performance going forward will be the amount of revenue we generate in excess of a break-even level in the range of $59 million per quarter. Now I'll turn the call over to Patricio, who will address our challenges and opportunities in greater detail.
Thank you, Jamie. As pointed out by Jamie, Q1, like Q4, was characterized by a steep ramp in shipments or 48-volt to point-of-load chip VTM3 and CPRM3 solution powering VR12.5 Intel processors. He also spoke of our expectations for a decline in Q2 shipments for these products. In my remarks, I will focus on our expectations for the remainder of 2015 and into 2016. I remind listeners that this is not our first product transition relating to generations of Intel processors. Our initial penetration in the data center space was with earlier generation PRM and VTM VA chips, meeting the VR12.0 standard, which took place in Q3 2011. We introduced a unique 48 to point-of-load solution to the market in late 2011 and received initial orders in early 2012. We had expected significant bookings for the second half of 2012. However, production did not begin until Q1 2013, as VR12 represented a significant shift in architecture. By the time we ramped production of our VR12 solution in 2013, the VR12.5 specification was released, and we responded in Q3 2013 by announcing our next generation solution consisting of VTM3 chip and PRM3 SIP. Our expectation was that this solution would ramp in the second half of 2014, which turned out to be the case. However, we did not anticipate that orders for earlier generation solution would decline as suddenly as they did. As is the case today, the 2013-2014 transition was characterized by inventory management issues at contract manufacturers. I offer this history in support of my strong belief that we are far better positioned for the next transition to VR13 than we were during prior transitions. First, we have a VR12.5 backlog and additional demand forecasted to book and ship through the balance of this year, bringing us to the VR13 uptake. Unlike past transitions, we expect to have sustained activity and are carefully managing our raw materials and WIP inventory to minimize any risk of obsolescence. Second, we have a multiplicity of VR13 design wins and a roadmap for expanded opportunities for our 48-volt input solutions. Third, and most important, we have a substantial traction with potential customers across a range of applications beyond servers in data centers. We're building momentum with additional OEMs in the U.S. and in Asia, making and utilizing their own server farms or selling servers and supercomputers to other OEMs. Greater breadth of applications should provide the diversity of revenue streams, higher growth rate, and growth rate stability that we've been targeting. With this objective clear in our minds, during the first quarter, we significantly expanded our line of innovative chips and SIPs. These devices address applications in data centers, telecom, datacom, electric, and hybrid electric vehicles, industrial, aerospace, and defense applications. Leveraging advanced proprietary power processing, modular packaging, and control technology, in which we invested over $250 million, chips exhibit power density levels far greater than any competitive converter, enabling customers to optimize their systems by achieving significant reductions in volume and weight. For example, our latest chip bus converters deliver power density greater than 3 kilowatt per cubic inch, at least 5 times better than quote-unquote competitive products. That is, they take up 1/5 the volume and generate less heat while being more cost-effective. That's what we call product differentiation, which is at the core of the compelling value proposition Jamie referenced in his remarks. With our unique factorized power architecture components and system-in-a-package zero-voltage switching regulators, power system architects are able to create complete integrated power solutions offering much higher performance and ease of use with a far lower total cost of ownership. chips as bar-mounted power components or encased within VIA systems will be the primary drivers of future revenue and profit growth. As stated in our press release today, during the first quarter, we started sampling VIA system products providing complete front-end solutions. Design cycles for chassis mount front-end products are typically shorter than for board-mounted power components, and we're seeing the first major VIA design win going into production in Q1 2016. While we're still in the very early going, it has become clear the chassis mount VIA front-ends and board-mounted VIA bricks should be a major revenue driver for the BBU, and that starting in 2016, the BBU should once again become a growth business on the strength of its VIA products. As importantly, VIA front-ends play a synergistic complementary role to our point-of-load chips and SIPs and position Vicor as the unique provider of high-performance, cost-effective modular power solutions from the wall plug to the point of load. Early this month, we announced the addition of three buck boost SIPs to our PiCore cool power point of load regulator portfolio. Using our unique power conversion engines and control systems, losses are minimized and efficiency greater than 98% are achieved with best-in-class power density and transient response performance. One variant, the PI3749, addresses a wide range of high-performance applications, including computing, communications, industrial, LED lighting, and battery systems. Other models, the PI3751 and the PI3755, have been optimized for factorized power architectural applications in conjunction with chip VTMs to expand our offerings in server and data center applications for power delivery to processor and memory. Over the coming months, Vicor will be rolling out other highly differentiated products, all designed to enable end-to-end implementation of factorized power solutions across a broad range of uses requiring high power density, high efficiency, and improved market-leading design flexibility. All should contribute to customer, market, and application diversity. Despite my enthusiasm, or perhaps because of it, I must caution listeners regarding revenue expectations for the new products I've highlighted. Given design and sales cycles, significant contributions to revenue from these new products will not occur until 2016. In anticipation of a strong 2016, we continue to consider alternatives for capacity expansion. As stated last quarter, we have the ability to scale up our own manufacturing capacity and have proven quite adept at redirecting resources or otherwise identifying opportunities for increased capacity and production efficiency without major capital equipment expenditure. However, our business plan is based on ramping production of a wide range of new products, and the forecast volumes imply we will need escalating capacity into 2016 and 2017. We continue to assess partnering opportunities as well as greenfield strategies. To conclude my prepared remarks, revenue levels will not be progressing steadily over the next few quarters. We're very close to our goal of enabling a leapfrog power component design methodology that will be a game changer for the entire power system marketplace. We're nearing our objective of broad portfolio of integrated, high-performance, easy-to-use, cost-effective solutions from the power source to the point of load based on a combination of VIAs at the chassis level and chips and SIPs at the board level, supported by advanced software tools, establishing Vicor as a truly differentiated vendor of comprehensive integrated power system solutions from the wall plug to the point of load. This concludes my prepared remarks. Jamie and I will now take your questions.
Operator?
Hello. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. Your first question comes from the line of Mr. Jim Bartlett. Your line is now open.
Yes, Patrizio, could you just help us understand a little bit the Intel processor rollouts and their data center chips and the names of those and how that rollout with the time lag, whatnot, impacts on you with the VR13?
So that rollout has got, you know, certainties, as I'm sure you know, the predictability with respect to availability of next generation Intel processors is not being consistently good. So there is nearly some uncertainty with respect to that. And that's a factor with respect to our expectations on revenue levels over the next few quarters because of the impact it might have on the timing of the VR13 ramp and the start of a decline with respect to VR12.5 shipments. You know, part of the opportunity going forward is outside of the data center space. It's in other type of computing or supercomputing applications. So that's going to be a factor. The timing of rollout of different programs is not coincident. It's likely to be staggered. VR13 is likely to be around for a longer time frame than VR12.5. And we're aware of some of our new customers looking to introduce their products or begin to build their server farms at a date that may not coincide with the start of the VR13 availability. So it's a complex landscape, and there are many facets to it. We view the Motricia facets as a positive factor in enabling us to achieve the greater level of diversification that we've been pursuing.
What is Intel saying now about the availability of the VR13?
Well, it's a function of what you mean by availability. Limited availability in terms of systems being brought up, depending on which particular customer application we're referencing, is as early as the next couple of months, okay? But from that to the start of production, there are lags that, again, are going to be a function of the customer and the nature of the application.
And are those lags several months? I mean, can be several months or can be...
I think that as of now, a good time frame for the start of meaningful ramps is the beginning of 2016.
Beginning of...
Yeah.
That's for them, and you would closely follow that.
Well, actually, we would, generally speaking, you know, I was answering your question more from the perspective of, you know, our ramp, which must precede the customer ramp, given our lead times, assembly times, and so on and so forth.
Would it be fair to say, as far as getting a new data center customer, it's our customers, it's dependent on that.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood your question. What's dependent on that?
You have one large data center customer now.
So I'm not going to be very specific with respect to customers, but I think I can clearly state that we're, with VR13, looking at expanding our footprint, both in terms of customers and applications, both within the data center and outside of the data center, with both computing and supercomputing applications.
Right. Great. Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of John Dillon. Your line is now open.
Hey, first of all, congratulations, guys. That's a really good quarter.
Thank you.
Patrizio, I think you mentioned that there was a significant increase in design wins. Can you give us a little bit more color on that? What kind of design wins? What markets? Are these quantity design wins, high quantities?
Some of them are, they fit into our strategy of diversification. I think we've, in this call and prior calls, spent quite a bit of time talking about data centers. Obviously, that's a very important market, one where we achieved early penetration with Intel processors, one that we want to build upon by expanding the footprint with our initial major customer to provide more of the total solution, but also with other customers in that space. But as I mentioned a little while ago, outside of the space, we are seeing a general magnification of interest with respect to 48-volt solutions, which is, in effect, at the heart of our value proposition. In other words, we're seeing, not just in the data center, but in other computing applications, supercomputing applications, a transition or strong interest toward our more efficient, more dense, more overall cost-effective solutions. So that's an important part of the strategy going forward. And by the way, while that will play a role in connection with Intel processors, it's also going to be playing a role with other kinds of processors, including, you know, some of kinds of processors that we powered in the past. So we see growth opportunities in the computing space in a number of different directions within and outside the data center. But now we should, you know, broaden our horizon further, because it would be a mistake to think that our all growth strategy is predicated on computing applications only. We see opportunities, significant opportunities outside of that space that we've talked about for quite some time. So we're getting traction in some automotive applications. You know, we're getting traction in other markets, industrial applications, communications applications. You know, we're continuing to get good traction in some specialty markets such as defense and aerospace. You know, coming back to computing, we're seeing traction not at the point of load, or in addition to one at the point of load I was referencing earlier, in the front end of some of these systems where high density conversion is required in order to bring power to the motherboards that contain you know, the point of load devices. And, you know, initially, as has been the case for some earlier design cycles, we may not, in this particular instance, get the point of load business, but we're going to make a significant entry in the front end, which I believe will be a precursor to greater penetration on the motherboards at the point of load. So it's a broad strategy, and, you know, people that are not intimately aware of the nature of our business and business model and power component methodology may be tempted to think that, you know, we're spreading ourselves thin, but that would be a mistake, because an essential point of leverage of our power component methodology is that inherently in the power component concept, you have a high degree of flexibility with respect to essentially with the same type of building blocks, being able to address very diverse market requirements in a broad range of end markets and applications. And so we're taking advantage of that point of leverage, the fact that our engines, the same engine that is very adept at processing power at the point of load, is also very adept as the front-end converter, and so on and so forth. So we believe we have a very comprehensive strategy, is very well thought out to make the most of what we believe is going to be a fundamental change in the power system marketplace.
Okay, so it sounds like the 48 volts is a real differentiator for you, and that's really driving new design wins in, as you would say, a multiplicity of markets. Is that
48 volts, the uptake, the more general uptake is of 48 is a driver. It certainly plays into some of our strengths. I would, though, emphasize the fact that, you know, our strengths are not limited, you know, to 48-volt input type applications. You know, our engines are really very flexible and can support the general needs of power system requirements, again, across a broad range of markets and applications. We do like 48-volt as what you call, might call, the preferred hub. In other words, in taking, if you want to use the line analogy, in taking customers from, you know, point A to point B and C and D, we like to go by way of the 48-volt bus because of the power distribution efficiencies and other benefits of 48 volts. And the good news is that there is grassroots, a growing grassroots realization that 48 volt is far superior to 12 volt in terms of a power distribution bus. With current trends in loads, in terms of increasing requirements for density, efficiency, and other key attributes, you know, 48 volt as a power distribution hub is becoming more and more popular. And the fact that some of our early customers have had great success with this is bringing about, you know, more believers and more takers of the same kind of solution.
Okay, and so I wasn't sure if I heard. Did I hear that you did have some new design wins in data centers?
Yes.
Excellent. And are these big data centers like the previous one that you had?
So I'm not going to go into details, but as I mentioned earlier, I'll go as far as saying that we anticipate that our penetration with the R13 is going to be considerably broader than it has been with the R12.5 and the R12. You know, we're seeing growing opportunities both within the data center and outside of the data center.
In that vein, with the VR13, there's a group called the Open Compute Project. Do you think you'll ever get into the Open Compute Project with that technology?
I don't know that I want to make a comment with respect to that at this point in time. I think that I will save that for another day, let's put it this way. I think we are focused primarily on certain key customers that are looking to migrate from traditional 12-volt power distribution to 48-volt or all of the known benefits of that. And these are customers in the U.S., notably their customers also, and potential customers in Asia, particularly in China.
Okay. One other question I'll get in the queue. You had mentioned that you're getting some traction with front ends, and I thought you mentioned in the computer marketplace, and I don't think you've ever had a lot of success in the high-volume computer marketplace with front-end solutions. Is that correct? And when this hits, will we see a little spike in the revenue from that?
We are forecasting significant revenue from a first design win in that space, starting Q1 2016.
And that is in the computing arena?
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay, thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Your next question comes from the line of Don McKenna. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. I'll add my congratulations to the quarter. I wanted to ask you, you know, based on your expectations for the second quarter now, do you expect that to be the low point for the year?
Well, I think that we should keep an open mind with respect to what the next two or three quarters will bring. As mentioned earlier, we're dealing with a relatively volatile situation with respect to, in particular, the VR 12 and a half applications and the timing of VR 13. And there are also other opportunities. Again, while we talk a lot about data center and VR 12 and a half, these are still, at this point in time, relatively small percentage of total revenues, right? And so there are other factors at play, and I think it's best to take a wait-and-see attitude since things can change up and down relatively quickly. I think that the key point from my perspective is looking beyond the next couple of quarters at what opportunities we have as we get towards the end of the year and into Q1 of 2016. And that's frankly what we're primarily focused on. We know that our operational teams are very capable of dealing with changing requirements, and you know, we're prepared to deal with them going either way over the next couple of quarters.
All right. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way I read this, that while the overall gross margin was 45 and change, it looked like the incremental part was in excess of 50%. You know, once you got over break even, is that what's dropping down to the gross margin line now, about a 50% figure?
Well, so in as mentioned in the prepared remarks, we are we're quite satisfied with the progress that we've been able to make with margins for new products. In this regard, I think in particular the Vicor team has done a wonderful job in one respect, but to be fair, the VRChip team has also done a remarkable job in a different kind of respect. The two operational models are quite different, very complementary. You know, one is fabless, one relies on, you know, very proprietary packaging technology. You know, they both play a important synergistic role in our total solution capability. And with different factors at play, they've shown remarkable ability to deliver improved gross margins and bottom line performance, particularly in the case of VRChip, as the volumes come up. I want to emphasize that's key, because with VRChip we have largely fixed cost structure because it's not a fabless model. So it's very important for VRChip to be making more and more, and as the volumes crank up, we can deliver significant improvements in margins and profitability. So this was the first quarter in which our new products at margins in excess of good old bricks, which, as some of you might recall, you know, earlier in the life of the company, delivered 65% type of margins. You know, I've been telling you for quite some time that we expected to get to those margin levels and beyond for our new cutting-edge products, which have a very strong intellectual property foundation. They have very strong investment, you know, that we made in an infrastructure that is highly scalable with respect to capacity and meeting growing demands by a broadening customer base. So if that happens, we are going to see some very good performance on the part of Vicor via chip and, you know, eventually the merge entity of the two. While at the same time, we're going to see through VIA products that contain chips within them, resurgence of growth and margin opportunity for the BBU, because there too there is a very strong differentiated value proposition with the VIA products.
Okay, thank you. And just one, I'm sure somebody's going to ask you anyway, but can you just try to sort out and give us a brief explanation of where the litigation stands these days? I see the press releases, and I find it a little bit confusing, you know, as to what parts been put to bed and what parts are still open. Can you address that?
Well, I think our adversary may be trying to confuse what is going on. You know, from our perspective, what is going on is quite clear in both the front of invalidating the Syncor patents. In the last quarter, we had a major milestone while the companies that Syncor attacked in the earlier Texas litigation, you know, failed with respect to arguing invalidity. We succeeded at the Federal Circuit, which is in effect the highest court of the land when it comes to patents. Federal Circuit agreed with us that the fundamental claims of the first of a family of patents by Syncor is clearly flawed, invalid, anticipated by prior art, of which Dr. Schlecht was keenly aware as he played a role with respect to directing research at MIT, you know, prior to his founding of Syncor. Coincidentally, the Federal Circuit found that it was that art that anticipated Syncor 190 patent. The other patents are all based on the same specification. They're all based on fundamentally the same concept. This concept was known long before Dr. Schlecht claimed to have invented it, and these patents are going down the drain. I think from my perspective, this has been obviously a source of significant distraction and cost. We're obviously not going to take our eyes off the ball. We will see it to its bitter end, which will, I expect, bring about an end to these patents before they expire in any case in the next couple of years. Our objective is to cause them to be invalidated before they expire. In any case, we don't infringe them.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Your line is now open.
Yes. Could you expand on what's going on? You mentioned automotive, but would you anticipate any significant automotive-related revenue in 2016?
Yes, we expect this potential for millions of dollars worth of revenues in that space.
In 2016.
Yep.
Also, what is happening in the defense electronic space? I think there was one very potentially large order that might have been postponed or delayed, given what was going on with the federal budget. Could you give us an update on what's happening there?
I think the general space is still, or market is still, relatively constrained. You know, we are, you know, maintaining focus on it. Obviously, it's played a significant role in our past, but we expect it to play a significant role in our future because our products, as dense, lightweight, and efficient as they are, are a natural fit for demanding applications in defense applications. So we, and obviously, you know, given you know, how the world works, you know, defense will be there for a long time, and it can be an important part of our revenue mix. You know, but at the same time, as clearly suggested by you know, earlier discussion and earlier comments, we are very focused on a diversification strategy that is leveraged by a power component, a unique power component methodology. And the good news, again, is that with the same type of building blocks, we can go into an airborne application for defense type of systems. And with the same building blocks, we can be in a computer, or can be in a different kind of system, industrial system. And so to some extent, our development activities are general purpose, common denominator, and our market strategy is to divide and conquer and pursue these opportunities in a, you know, cohesive and synergistic way.
You'd mentioned that the distribution business declined a bit. Has your outlook for that part of the business changed?
No, we see the distribution channel as being a very important growing portion of our business. It's very complementary in many ways. I think the comment that was made in the prepared remarks had to do more with, you know, the level of stock that distributors might need to hold, given the fact that more and more of our products are, for example, firmware configured or configured for an application, and that entails a level of mass customization that calls for very rapid delivery of products by distributors, but, you know, from Andover or, you know, a suitable facility that involves Vigor.
And finally, you'd mentioned making or exploring a decision on capacity expansion. When do you expect to make that decision?
Well, I was reminded actually this morning that, you know, we have a team that is, you know, working this issue on one particular front as we speak. So we have, as part of our process, that initiative, and we're looking at all of the options with respect to expanding capacity over the next couple of years. You know, we do have a lot of opportunity in Federal Street facility. It's 250,000 square feet facility. There is additional space actually to be had within that facility. So we're looking at that as an option. We're looking at the option of farming out a portion of the assembly of the product. We're looking at options involving partners to make part or all of the product.
Should we expect a decision on that this year?
I think that I don't want to pinpoint the timing for that decision. It is an ongoing process, and I don't mean to be cute about it, but I think it would be best to say that we'll tell you the moment that we have a decision on the general front.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of John Dillon.
Hey, Patrizio. I'm trying to get a handle. It sounds like you're going to have a little bit of a down quarter this quarter. What about the second half of the year? Do you expect that to grow a little bit? Do you see a little growth coming on that? I mean, how's your bookings trending, and how's your forecast look for the second half of the year?
Our forecast for the year is relatively strong. I think that relative to last year in terms of bookings and shipments. I think that with respect to pinpointing performance by quarter, it would be treacherous because of the factors that were articulated earlier in the conversation. So we've experienced dramatic shifts in demands going in one particular direction within a matter of literally a few weeks, and that could happen going the other way, or it might not. And, you know, particularly as you get a little further out, a lot of things can happen, meaning it becomes harder to forecast. But the corporate bookings forecast for the year is significantly up from last year. 2016 shows a bigger rate, you know, with reference to comments and some key points made in earlier calls. You know, we're looking at an event of particular significance in the first half of next year with respect to, you know, busting out of the level of revenues that we've seen as an historical cap, and that's going to be on the strength of design wins across customers and applications of the kind that we were referencing earlier.
So I completely understand the wins can shift very dramatically, but you do forecast continued increase in bookings and revenue for the year is what I think I'm hearing.
Well, you're trying to put words in my mouth. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the general trend is up. Forecasting revenues from quarter to quarter is a treacherous game. As Jamie suggested at the beginning and you know, also pointed to in my prepared remarks, this quarter, Q2, is likely to be a down quarter on revenues. With respect to Q3 and Q4, we're not making any forecasts at this point.
Okay. But then it sounds like you've got a certain runway business, but then in 2016 you're saying you're going to see additional data centers come on with you. You're going to see millions of dollars in the automotive. You're going to see the front ends kicking in. I would imagine you're going to see some increase in the communications and the BBU you expect to grow. Did
right.
I hear that correctly? Okay, so that's...
So let me put it this way. Internally, you know, the word we use to refer to this is floodgates. So we have floodgates of new products on both the chip front, the SIP front, and the VIA front that have been coming out and are coming out at an accelerating rate. These are products that are getting customers and potential customers very excited. Depending on the type of product that we're talking about, we got longer designing cycles. Anything that goes on a customer board, particularly if it involves an architectural change, by definition has got a long designing cycle. But then we have VIA products, which are primarily front ends, and those have a shorter design cycle. So there's a blend of you know, products with different time to revenue, time to fruition. They're going to play themselves out. They're already playing themselves out with some customers. There's going to be more as the year progresses because our rate on new product introduction is growing in very significant ways. You know, we've, for example, with DC-DC converter products, if I go back to last year, and we called these DCMs, you know, we had for quite some time a difficult time getting the first one out. We gather now tens of them out, and that's going to go from tens to hundreds of different configurations in a relatively near time frame. You know, bus converters, up the gazoo, of all different kinds, novel types, setting new records in terms of efficiency and density. PFMs, other kinds of functions, coming out in both chip form and, you know, for just about every chip entry, there is a VIA counterpart that plays, again, a complementary role. So there's a lot of action going on various fronts, and ultimately, I think the trick is very simple. With great products, you can get a lot of customers excited, and that leads to design wins, and design wins turn into orders and revenue growth. It's as simple as that.
Yep. And, I mean, it sounds like for 2016, you're pretty confident of this because you already have the design wins is what I think I'm hearing. Is that correct?
Yes, we have design wins, and we're getting more design wins as we speak. So we are making progress with existing customers, expanding our footprint, and with new customers, expanding our footprint, not just in the data center space, in other spaces. And as more and more of these new products come out, the rate of progress is going to accelerate.
It just sounds really good. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
Why don't we wrap up?
Yeah, if there is one more question, otherwise we're
there are
close.
No further questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. Talk to you soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's presentation, and you may now disconnect. Have a great day.